Going back to Syria and mm-hmm. the problems that people face in Syria, we might have sounded to some people that we were romanticising Syria by not referring to the problems, because I was aware of the problems. Mm-hmm. I did know about the secret police. Of course, you mm-hmm. can't live in Syria without knowing about the secret police. You can't live in Syria without mm-hmm. having someone point out to you, you know, a prison over there. You can't. But I still agree with you. People were genuinely happy and mm-hmm. proud to be Syrian. But you didn't, that was the surface, definitely. But you didn't know how perhaps the secret police were affecting this family or that family. But you did have insight. You spoke Arabic, you speak Arabic, and you met many, many families. So what you say must be of some value.
Well, I... Yes, but I would hope so. I mean, yes, you're right. You are aware, like I made the comment, that they don't speak about political things as such, perhaps like we do. That's a general thing you'll find across the Middle East. And, you know, you are aware that there are certain areas of Syria that, you know, certain towns or whatever that are not fond, I guess you'd say, of this regime, or have historically, there's been historical issues from way back, sometimes way back, could be 30 or 40 years or more than that, and so there's, you know, discontent there, or the whole grudges. It can be a clan thing, even more than sort of like political ideology. A lot of it's got to do with a tribal thing or a clan thing, so you're aware of things like that too. And so when the conflicts started, it seemed like it was coming from, you know, those groups that in times past have also threatened to, you know, rise up, as it were. There was sort of like this combination of, well, young folk just demonstrating, like, well, young folk here do, university students and things, saying they want more say in the government, or they want changes, or and doing it in a peaceful manner. And then there was this violence that started, or, you know, that there are areas that always sort of simmering a little bit there, that sort of took advantage of the situation. But then it sort of got, they started, you know, these, it sort of went around certain areas of the country that you knew it was coming from somewhere else. And
they were border towns, usually.
Border towns, yes. Mm. Yeah, that the worst things were happening around on that east, bordering Iraq, the east, northeast probably, and around the Turkish area, down into Iraqi border, things like that. And so...
And yeah. Lebanon and Jordan as well.
Yes, well, that's true. Yeah, so, you know, it was clear that there were outside influences coming in, and I think that's become more and more obvious too. So what they're saying about this... The rebel groups, as they're called, are, you know, in so many different factions, in different ways. Well, that's why they're actually, you know, have different agendas, and the ones that are coming from outside are particularly focused, I think, on the Islamist regimes, and particularly focused on Syria being an Islamic state. Syrian people themselves, generally when you talk to them, want a secular state, and I think the Syrian, you know, the young people that have demonstrated in the past just wanting changes and things resent the outside influence of, from both the terrorist groups coming in and trying to hijack
their efforts
for reform peacefully, and also the West, the who are saber-rattling about interfering in Syria. And I think that's one of the things that we need to keep in mind, and what we've failed to do is consider what's best for the Syrian people. We seem to have this idea that we know what's best for them, you know. Our style of government is what's best, and we think that's what they're agitating for, you know, that sort of style of Western democracy. You know, we're going to support them in that, but...
But what's extraordinary is we think that that's what they're agitating for, and they're doing it for guns,
yeah.
With guns.
Yeah.
They're doing it through violence by killing soldiers,
yes,
in the regular army, and we support that.
Yes, that's right, because you think, well, if they did get control of the country, when they've got control by violence, by killing the established soldiers in the army, and a lot of, you know, horrible atrocities have been committed, then how does that sort of, how then do you form an effective democratic government?
Based
peaceful
on violence.
Government that's been based on violence, yes, exactly. So,
but of course, what people would say would be, well, the Assad regime started it. And I would challenge that.
I would challenge that too. I'm not quite sure what they would mean by saying
they started the violence. But I know that the nephews, I tell this story all the time, the nephews of a good friend of mine, young nephews, teenage boys, were killed on the 17th of April 2011, just 1 month after the beginning of the crisis.
Mm.
They were killed by armed men, and it was armed men, armed gangs that were going around killing people, usually targeting people based on their sectarian background or because they were soldiers or security personnel.
Mm.
And this didn't get into our newspapers.
No, that's true. We hear a lot of these stories from sources from within the country that's not coming through our media because they're only... It's interesting, isn't it? Our media would like to think that they're... open and report the truth, and they're so biased towards one way that and totally refusing to listen to any other point of view, that it's totally negates what they're trying to say. I think you can't really look at what's happening in Syria from what's coming through the Western media, because they're not hearing half of the stories that are coming from people from within the country, and what they are saying has as much right to be heard as you know, what the Western media thinks other groups are saying. And yeah.
And a lot of that story of Syria is being distorted also by the media in the Arab world, for example, Al Jazeera,
yeah,
which is linked to the Qatari royal family,
yes,
and the Qatari foreign policy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's lost a lot of credibility in the Middle East, but people in the West perhaps aren't aware of that.
Yes, people in the West don't know the politics of the region at all. So I would say to people, beware of taking sides in an area that you know nothing about, because certain countries support a regime and certain countries are opposed to it. And so what they are saying is all going, you know, according to who they support and who they want in power, and it's often got nothing to do with what's best for the Syrian people. And in fact, most of the countries outside of Syria who are taking sides one way or the other are not doing so out of their concern for the Syrian people, and I think this is where our heart should be, really listening to the Syrian people and doing what's best for them and not being caught up in all the propaganda that's going from other groups, including the West.
I think one fear the Syrian people would have is that those countries, particularly Qatar, Saudi Arabia, perhaps Turkey as well, they want to own Syria. They want to buy Syria. And Syrian people are very independent.
Mm.
And that's one thing that they, the vast majority, would never allow.
Mm.
So you'd have to kill millions for that to happen.
Yes, yeah.
That's exactly the tragedy.
Yes, it is. And that's one of the reasons why this conflict has, you know, people saying it's sort of dragging on and da-da-da-da, I think that's one of the reasons why, if the people of Syria, the majority, wanted to get rid of Assad, it would have happened by now. But the majority of people actually support him. And I mean, I think that's the reason why the rebel fighters have not made as much ground as you'd expect they would have by now.
With the funding they've got.
Yes, exactly. With the support they're getting from outside. Mm.
A myth, I think, that most people have taken on board is that it's an Alawi regime. And I would say that you've got to look at the government. The Minister of Defence is Sunni, the Foreign Minister is Sunni, the Information Minister is Sunni, the Vice President, two Vice Presidents are Sunni. The majority of ministers are Sunni.
Mm.
The majority of soldiers are Sunni.
Yes.
It's so difficult to impress on people. It's not an Alawi regime.
Yes.
It's a Syrian government.
Yes.
Representative of
all of the people.
All of the people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true.
And the army. So the army would be mainly Sunni.
Mm.
So you've got these...
Because they are the majority.
Because they're the majority. Mm. And they couldn't function unless they were. They couldn't have the strength they've got unless they were. Mm. So you've got these foreign jihadists going in there thinking they're going to save Sunni Muslims like themselves based on what they've been told perhaps by the media or by their clerics, and they're actually going in there to kill their fellow Sunni Muslims and other human beings.
Yes, yeah, that's right. And accusing a lot of the Syrian freedom fighters who are, you know, well, as they're called, freedom fighters, accusing them of being heretic because they're not fighting as Muslims as such, who are, they're fighting for whatever reasons they are, but these fighters coming from outside are particularly focused as Islamists, and so they're now accusing Syrian people of being heretical because they're not fundamental Muslims like these groups are, and so, you know, the Syrians are finding themselves, you know, with these now, with these fundamental groups in their country, which is very hard to get them out once they're in there, you know, not only fighting the government and attacking villages of, you know, Muslims, Christians, just attacking local villages, they're also, you know, ridiculing Syrians who are fighting, so, yeah.
Thank you.